So welcome back to La Rage de Peuple, 90.3 CKUT FM in Montreal. I'm joined in the studio. Well, not joined. We've been working on this all day with Mustafa Henaway. Hey, Moose.
Hey, Jaggy.
Yeah, in case people are wondering who some of these voices are doing these interviews, we don't introduce ourselves, but I'm Jaggy, and that's Mustafa, and we, along with Kader Balouni, I guess, are the main hosts today.
For this 12-hour La Rage de Peuple.
Yeah, this 12-hour marathon of rage. I just wanted to check in with folks about what we've already played. I'm going to be using a term a lot today called on the upload, because I know a lot of people probably aren't going to be able to tune in for 12 hours. Do you know anybody who is planning on it?
I think Kader is actually tuning in for
hopefully 12 hours. Bonjour, Kader. But aside from Kader, I'm sure some folks would want to check out this audio. So a lot of it's going to be on the upload, as I say. And if you want to find out where, just check into the CKUT Community News blog. That's cKUTnews.wordpress.com.
Yeah.
.com.
And also, people can, even if they want to backtrack, they can always get it off the archives.
I prefer doing it on the upload, because that way I can cover up all my mistakes. There's a couple of teching mistakes because it's New Year's Day. But either way, check out the archive at ckut.ca or visit our blog, ckutnews.wordpress.com, or just email news at ckut.ca and you can get the upload. But just to let you know what we've had on already, we had started the day with South Asian Community News, an extended issue edition of South Asian Community News. We had pre-recorded interviews with Arti Shahani, who is an organizer with Families for Freedom in New York City. One of the themes today, and this is, I guess, a theme that probably will come up again when Radio Sanctuary, are the incredible migrant rights protests that emerge in the United States. Literally, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people, and not just the big cities, but also smaller towns that mobilize. And so, aside from Arti, there'll be other people today, but we had Arti on already, talking about those mobilizations. We also had a presentation by Sonali Koltakar, who spoke at an event by CKT earlier this year. You helped put together that event back in April, no?
Media, Occupation, and War.
That's it. You passed the test. Sonali talked about Canada's role in Afghanistan. And as well, we had a live interview from Calcutta. I guess it was our first interview out with an activist, Biplab Halim, who is working against the dispossession of peasants, of farmers, by Tata Motors, which is an auto company in India. But after that, we had Rafif from the Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions conference in Toronto. You were the one who recorded that audio.
Yeah, that was, hopefully on the upload, we'll have the entirety of that opening of the conference. I mean, it was quite... an amazing panel, not just her, but Salim Valley from South Africa, Jamal Jemma from Palestine. Essentially, you could feel the ending of Israeli apartheid in that panel.
All right. After Rafif, we had our friends from Amanla come in, Doug, Gwen, and also on the phone Aziz Fall, speaking about a lot of victories, the victory of the San in Botswana, some victories for the Justice for Sankara campaign. In studio so far, we've had Testa Salona, who is a local activist. She's active with the Center for Philippine Concern. She spoke about the repression in the Philippines, a country that doesn't get as much attention about repression, but it's a country where the second most amount of unionists have been killed after Colombia, and the second most amount of journalists have been killed after Iraq. And there's a lot of themes that sort of weave in and out of the day, because I asked Tess about the putting on the terrorist list of the Filipino Communist Party, and obviously that was a theme that came up again with Hezbollah, as we talked to Layla from Tataban, Montreal. We had footage, some coverage from Apple Fondeur of a demonstrations here in Montreal in solidarity with the people of Lebanon and Palestine against the bombardment this past summer. We had an interview with Bruce Katz after the attack on Beit Hanun. And I know, Moose, you have some audio that you're going to be playing a little bit bit later about the situation in Gaza.
Yeah, and we'll be airing an interview with Amjad Shawa, the member of the Palestinian NGO network, and he lives in Gaza City, speaking about what would be a very tumultuous year in Gaza, right from the elections of Hamas to this very day, the infighting that's taking place between Fatah and Hamas in the Gaza Strip. And we'll also be we'll be trying to get an interview with Six Nations about the current situation that's taking place on the land reclamation.
Yeah, we're working fiercely away at that. So today there's a special ceremony. I won't talk about it in detail now, but hopefully we'll be able to talk to somebody directly from Grand River Territory. But from Palestine to Lebanon to the Philippines to India to Afghanistan via Canada, because of Canada's role in Afghanistan, we ended up just now talking with Abdulhadi Kaderi, a local Afghan activist who is on the streets whenever he can to oppose Canada's role in Afghanistan and to speak about the situation there. So we spoke with him, and just now we had on Apofondeur, or a clip from Apofondeur, of a demonstration back in January of thousands of people. I was there. It was a really impressive demonstration in January of last year, 2006, to demand justice for Mohamed Anas Benes. So coming up, Mustafa already talked about a bit of it, but we'll be having audio recordings of activists from Port-au-Prince and Haiti, solidarity activists here. Hopefully we'll be having live in studio. I hope the weather doesn't keep them away. Iki Balam of Banner de Gaza, and a lot more. But right now, we're going to continue on the theme of Lebanon. I was able to talk just a couple of days ago with Rasha Mumneh. Rasha is an activist with I'm Somebody with Nobody. That's a campaign in Beirut. She's part of the Beirut Collective that wants to see a way out of the political deadlock currently in Lebanon. She'll describe what I'm Somebody with Nobody is about, but she'll also talk about the situation in Lebanon in general. She was in Beirut during the beginning of the bombardment. Rasha's interview is in two parts. I think we'll only have time for one, but that's why you'll have to wait for the upload, because you'll be able to hear both parts of the interview with Rasha. So we'll go to that right now, an interview with Rasha Mumneh of the I'm Somebody with Nobody campaign, an activist based in Beirut, Lebanon, interview just a few days ago. Rasha, I guess I'll start with asking you about this this campaign, I'm Somebody with Nobody. My only source on this protest was an article in the Daily Star, which described a small group of protesters that, in the context of the opposition protest and campout against the current Lebanese government, decided to organize a small protest to say that you're not part of any particular political party and that you're independent. So could you describe for our listeners what the I'm Somebody with Nobody campaign is all about, and why you felt it was important to launch this campaign in the context of these mass, large-scale protests currently underway in Lebanon?
Well, first of all, I think it's inaccurate to describe it as a reaction against the protests per se. It's more a reaction against the political deadlock that is happening between the opposition and the ruling coalition. And the fact that a lot of us felt that neither side was even representative of the real concerns of the people, to be perfectly honest. It was, there were a few people in the beginning who, after the protest, and there was a lot of hype surrounding the protest and a lot of hope, actually, about what the protest would be and what they would achieve. And that slowly, the disillusionment started setting in a while after they had started. So a group of people who are independent leftists decided to come together and sort of claim a third space, because it's also very, very difficult to kind of place yourself outside this very, you know, black and white situation, or what is portrayed as a black and white situation. So the I Am Somebody with Nobody campaign, the actual full title of it is I Am Somebody with Nobody, I Am Somebody with the causes of the people, as opposed to political lines and vacuous rhetoric.
Russia, I think the critique of the current Lebanese government is pretty well known by CKTU listeners. A government that showed itself to be inadequate during the Israeli bombardment. A government that is serving the interests, I guess, of Western governments such as the U.S. and France. A government that represents neoliberalism. But what is the critique of and I know the I Am Somebody With Nobody campaign is not a reaction against the current protests, but I'm wondering what the critique, what the shortcomings are of the current mobilizations that are being undertaken in Lebanon against the current government.
There's a lot, really. I'm not sure where to start. Well, during the war, a lot of issues started to come out, and people started feeling very betrayed by the government and its lack of response. And Nasrallah and Hezbollah generally, during the war, were also very quick to point out that certain files were going to be open, and people were going to be held accountable in the government for their shortcomings during the war. So a lot of people were very, after this immense feeling of betrayal by their own government, were ready to take to the streets and start talking about these very real issues, how the government completely failed in providing any sort of aid, how all the aid money had just completely disappeared, the fact that prior to the war, the country's debt was insane. And a lot of the issues that are being talked about now and the problems that we see predate the war. Very much, actually. So the protests came as a reaction to that. So a lot of us felt that these issues were going to be addressed during these protests. And as political slogans and political lines, they were, but in a very, very superficial way. The opposition did talk about corruption in the government. They did talk about the massive foreign debt of the government, the fact that people are being taxed unfairly, and all these very, very real concerns of the people, the fact that they just can't live properly anymore because the economic situation is so dire. But at the same time, I mean, it's very difficult to, you know, take them seriously when they're talking about corruption, when they have, you know, a major part of the coalition is the Emal Party, which is headed by Nabih Birri, who is you know, a symbol of corruption in the country. I don't think anyone can top him. And then, I mean, it became clear that the opposition, the coalition of the opposition, is not really interested in addressing any of these issues. And that's when the disillusionment came. They were sort of using these, you know, large slogans and statements to co-opt people. And I feel that a lot of people who are sitting down and who are joining the sit-down are going to feel extremely betrayed. What the opposition actually wants is not a change in the system. It's simply more power sharing. They're not interested in any root change. They don't talk about the problem of sectarianism. And the political deadlock is drawn along sectarian lines. There's a lot of, obviously, the issue of class plays very, very heavily into it. But in Lebanon, everything eventually rolls down to sectarianism. And we can see it very, very clearly today. And these issues are simply not being addressed. The war is not talked about at all. And there's a lot of us who feel that this was a horribly missed opportunity. And a lot of us who did support Nasrallah during the war, who did support the right to resist, feel extremely baited by the opposition's actions and the fact that they've just become political players vying for power, just like anyone else.
Russia, the term opposition is one way, I guess, to describe the protest. There's another term that is used, which is the resistance, either the national resistance or the Islamic and national resistance. This is the term, the umbrella term, that's used to describe the forces that actively fought against
previously the Israeli occupation, and most recently during the Israeli invasion and bombardment.
Mm-hmm.
Does I'm Somebody with Nobody identify as part of this resistance? What are your thoughts about this term, this umbrella term, the resistance, and how mm-hmm. do you individually, and how does I'm Somebody with Nobody identify with this resistance?
Well, the term resistance with a capital R has been monopolized by Hezbollah. This is since the Lebanese Civil War of 1975 to 1990, when there were many groups fighting in the south against the Israeli invasion, but who were slowly eliminated until Hezbollah was able to monopolize the entire resistance. All the other elements, the leftists, the nationalists, the socialist nationalist parties that were fighting in the south were completely marginalized. So there's a problem now that we can only refer to resistance in Lebanon with a capital R, which means Hezbollah. And I Am Somebody with Nobody is very clear about supporting the right to resist and the right to armed resistance as well. But we also feel that it is extremely unfair that this term has become used by one force. And I wouldn't confuse the resistance with the resistance is Hezbollah currently, and it's one part of, albeit the largest party of the opposition.
You've talked about the root issues, the issues as you described them that were there before the war, and that would be mm-hmm. Economic issues, issues of social justice, mm-hmm. the occupation, etc. And obviously, there are certain vehicles to express that. One is political parties. And Hezbollah and other political parties clearly represent some issues in some way through political parties. Mm-hmm. But how does I Am Somebody with Nobody, or how your particular political perspective that is leftist, mm-hmm. that is for resistance, that is for the right to struggle and for armed struggle, How does that get expressed tangibly in an organizational way? How do you see those views effectively becoming more popular and more effective so that resistance with a capital R cannot be monopolized by one particular faction? Just to be, just to maybe put it in another way, there are, I guess, I'm not sure of the exact numbers, you would know better, but approximately 1 million people, maybe more, that identify mm-hmm. and participated in some way with the opposition protests.
Yeah.
And the way the Daily Star described it was, here was a group of 20 people, you know, that did their protests. And I'm certainly not somebody, having participated in many small protests myself, that discounts mm-hmm. the fact that you start somewhere. But what yeah. what is the organizational vehicle to make this much larger and to be able to speak to the aspiration of average working people? Because you've already addressed the class mm-hmm. dimension, and clearly I think the opposition protests represent a certain class within mm-hmm. Lebanon that is not the elite bourgeois class that usually mm-hmm. is sitting eating sushi in those cafes. So that's maybe another way to look at the question.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, the Hezbollah's constituency is clearly not the elite, although the second largest party in the opposition, which is the Aounist Party, the Free Patriot Movement, is largely made up of middle-class Christians. So it's not clearly a sectarian divide, and it's not clearly a class divide. I mean, everything happens in tandem. As to how we plan to sort of move forward with this, well, firstly, I think it's very, very important to create a space where people can express this view, because I cannot emphasize enough how trapped so many people feel into sort of claiming one side or another, because very simply no alternative is given. I mean, of course, we're realists. We can't offer another, you know, alternative in the same way that these two major blocks are offering. But if you go and talk to a lot of the people in downtown, and a lot of them do express very real concerns about how they're going to send their kids to school, how they're going to eat, how they're going to pay rent, how their demolished homes are going to get rebuilt. And when you ask them, well, do you think a national unity government is actually going to solve this? so very pointedly tell you, well, no, we don't, but we need some sort of change. So, I mean, contrary to the Western media's portrayal of the opposition, the people with the opposition as these mindless sheep, they are extremely aware, at least, you know, a large portion of them are. And they're not idiots, and they're not fools. And, you know, when Nasrallah goes up and says, well, Fuad Sanyura is a traitor, and a liar, a thief, and a collaborant, and then says, but we'll forgive you if you give us power. I mean, that's not very, you know, credible in a lot of people's eyes. It's like, okay, what are you trying to do exactly? So I think that there are a lot of people that can be swayed by this third way. So what we've decided to do is to focus on specific issues that are very grounded and very real and very specific with our actions. The first time we went, you know, the group went down to the street was fairly small. It was 20 people. That was, you know, just basically a launching of what the campaign is about and what it aims to do. The next step was to organize a small demo about the issue of the Lebanese university, which is the state university, which has been mired in corruption and sectarianism and has been subject to political power plays, and the students are suffering. And this is a very, you know, it's a Lebanese institution with a very long history, and it's the only state university that exists, and it's being driven into the ground. And a lot of people feel very strongly about the issue of the Lebanese university because it's inseparable from the politics that are happening in the country. So the next action was on the issue of the Lebanese university. And as, you know, the campaign goes along, it's going to start to try to raise awareness on issues like these, on real life issues, on things like privatization and you know, Lebanon's ascension to the WTO, which the opposition is addressing only in rhetoric, but I don't think anyone's deluded enough to think that they're actually going to deal with these issues. At this point, I think this is how we're going to begin. Where the campaign goes and how much it grows, I think we'll have to see.
I was wondering if you could offer your own self-critique of the "I'm Somebody with Nobody" campaign in terms of some of these issues around class. Often the sort of independent leftist approach in other settings as well, in other particular contexts, is dismissed as youth anarchists, people who are concerned certain issues that don't represent actual communities. So I'm just wondering if there's that self-critique, or if you can offer another sort of self-critique of what might be some of the potential shortcomings right now, or challenges, I guess, for the "I'm Somebody with Nobody" campaign for it to grow and to be able to reach more people. And I ask this question as a question that I think any independent left anti-authoritarian group or movement has to deal with. How do you move beyond a small group and be able to reach and address the concerns of everyday people?
No, I do think that's a very, very valid question. And the people who started the campaign, the progressive young leftist, I wouldn't call it a movement, but crowd at least in Lebanon is still very, very small. And very tightly knit, and is definitely subject to the critique of, you know, the cliquish, you know, young leftists who are bubbled off, if you want. But I think, I mean, what I find interesting about the "I Am Somebody with Nobody" campaign is that, first of all, the people who are a part of it are also extremely aware of this criticism, which, I mean, does not necessarily mean that they've overcome it, but a lot of what they're doing comes as a reaction to the fact that, you know, this shouldn't remain in a bubble, this shouldn't remain the privilege of a few, and these are issues that need to be addressed by a much, much wider audience. So, I mean, it's really a step forward into trying to break that bubble. And I think once more, I mean, the problem is, and the problem with a lot of leftist movements, and the reason a lot of Islamist movements have been able to take hold so strongly is that the Islamists obviously have a much they have a much larger grassroots base because they're able to offer people much needed, you know, social services. They're able to offer them education and health services and send their kids to school and feed them and clothe them. Leftist movements have not been able to do that, and that's one reason of why they haven't been able to flourish, if you want. And the I'm Somebody with Nobody campaign is very, very aware of this, and we're very aware of our limitations and what we are going to be able to do. And we don't claim, you know, to be ambitious beyond our means. I think the best that we can do is to sort of propagate the idea that there is a way out of this cult of personality that people have become obsessed with, whether in the figure of Nasrallah or Sayyura or Saad al-Hariri or whoever. And not just as a critique of the cult of personality, but by showing that there are shortcomings to their rhetoric, and by showing them that, you know, these are the issues that you have spoken of, and they have. I mean, if you go to downtown and you ask the people exactly what is wrong, and they're very aware. And these are the issues that we're raising. I mean, they're not exactly coming, you know, from nowhere. So at this point, this is really the best we can hope for.
This is a rather simple question, but I think it's an important one. And you just talked about the fact that groups like Hezbollah are able to offer schooling and other services accounts for their popularity, and independent leftist groups aren't able to offer that. Well, why? And again, I ask this, and knowing that's deliberately a simple question, but why is Hezbollah able to effectively respond to those immediate needs, including right now rebuilding, and why are leftists in general unable to respond to those immediate needs?
Well, Hezbollah is an extremely sophisticated and organized party. And they have, well, very simply, they have a lot of money. They have a lot, and they're able to financially. And this is not just true of Hezbollah or, you know, Shia parties. The Wahhabis are also very strong. Wahhabis in Saudi Arabia are also, you know, infamous for funding Sunni Islamist movements, Egypt and Jordan, who are also able to offer the same thing. Leftist movements, well, the bubble we were talking about is a bit of a problem in that they don't really a lot of to the people in a language that is immediate to them, often offering them rewards that might come at a later stage. And secondly, very simply, they just don't have money and are not organized enough, unfortunately.